everybody. Welcome to Micro Brew, Milwaukee Brewers Chatter from the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel. My name is J.R. Radcliffe. My colleague is Kurt Hogue. We are with the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel. We are watching Brewers baseball as we pod because it's Sunday night, baby, and the Brewers are on Sunday night baseball as we speak. It's early. It's tied 1-1 against the Braves in Williamsport, Pennsylvania. We get to react in real time. Always great radio, Kurt, when people on podcasts that you listen to a day, 2 days, sometimes a week later are reacting to moments. We're going to try not to do that, but of course we're going to. I'm helpless, Kurt. Can you do it? Can you turn your brain off while we're
I can turn it off. I can turn the game off. I'm not there.
That's true. You're not there. And are you upset about that? Because that was a cool little trip that you didn't get to take.
No, I wouldn't say I'm upset about it. The travel. Next time you get Todd on here asking about the delays he dealt with yesterday getting out there. It's not easy, and I think he had like a 6-hour delay or something. So I'm not upset about that. No, I have to go to New York. I'm going to New York on Tuesday. They're off day Monday.
Oh.
So
Todd's not just staying out in Pennsylvania to New York? No?
No. I mean,
okay.
So I don't know if I'm looking for that's the thing I'm less excited about. Like I've done New York. I'm just in my anti-big city mode right now because I just was in LA for like 5 days. I'm like, really? No, I gotta go to New York. Sorry, I gotta stop complaining. Actually, no, I should keep complaining. This is year 5 of me in the BBWA, and this is what you get.
Yeah,
this is who I am now.
In the interest as host to keep that to a minimum, I will not be asking Todd about travel issues because he's going to tell me whether I ask him or not. It's best not to.
That is true.
Best not to prompt that if I can help it. But it is a little wacky. They flew to New York. They then got on another plane to get to Williamsport. This is all in the span of 24 hours. And then they are hanging out with little leaguers. It looked like it was a lot of fun. Jacob Mizorowski was a hot item. The field itself looks very funny because it's full big league dimensions and there's like no stands. I think you can fit like 2,500 people in there. It's a teeny tiny little place. And it's a very historic field. It's been around for a long time. And this is cool. It's cool. The Brewers have not been on Sunday Night Baseball since 2022. That is
the lighting looks really bad.
Yeah, honestly,
like, but I mean, I
home plate.
I guess I don't know what I expected. That's what I should have expected.
I think it's weird that you play a game in a stadium that doesn't have ABS for one. I mean, like, what if that comes up? It's a close game. I could see that being an issue.
The rules are just it's cool to learn that the rules are. Hey, Rob Manfred's on. They could ask him about that.
Drake Baldwin is doubling to our Milwaukee zone or Madison zone, I should say.
Didn't you just say you weren't going to do?
I'm all over it. I'm going to do it.
Pitch updates.
The entire game. We're just going to get it. Honestly, like guy walks, I'm going to talk about it. Keep going. I'm sorry.
Especially because you're ahead of me. The rules don't apply when you don't want them to apply. That's fun.
That's true. If they lose this game, it honestly, it won't be a big deal because they've had a very good week thus far. So obviously we won't have a lot of info on Sunday because it's happening right in front of our faces as we talk to you. The Brewers went ahead and won the first two games of this series against the Atlanta Braves. Huge, huge in the chase for the National League's top seed to kind of certainly not the death knell for Atlanta, but the Brewers really getting a foothold over them. The Chicago Cubs lost a couple games at the same time. So as we enter in Sunday, it's a 7-game lead in the National League Central. Cubs won in lopsided fashion on Sunday. So it's not quite so bad. And the Brewers are losing. They also played the Mariners. The Brewers did. They won two out of three, 22-0 in the first game of that series. I spent part of that sheltering in a grocery store on my way home on Capitol Drive because of tornadoes in the area, including during the game and around the stadium where they just kept playing through it. This is what they do. They play through these sorts of things. So that was an interesting night for all involved. And the Brewers are playing great. Now, Kurt, the first thing I want to talk about is Jacob Bowers. Jake Bowers, he is going to get MVP votes. And the reason is that you vote for 10 guys for MVP. So there's a lot of guys who get MVP votes. But Jake Bowers has been so sensational in this season, certainly this week. He had that crazy diving slide to kick things off, that 22-0 game, and that certainly wasn't where it stopped. He had a massive home run against the Braves on a 12 pitch at bat on Saturday. That was the second double digit at bat of the game. At that point, he wore out Martin Perez. He had the RBI single to kick things off on Sunday night. Jake Bowers, Kurt, have we talked enough about Jake Bowers?
We haven't talked enough about my preseason prediction about Jake Bowers.
Tell me again, Kurt, what your preseason prediction was. I can tell it.
I don't remember what the exact wording was, but it was he's going to have a full breakout, all-star consideration. I think that was the gist of it. He's been I feel like we have talked about him plenty. Is it enough? I'm not sure, because this guy has been incredible, and it's kind of funny when you think about it. Like, this Bryce Tarang might be their first like hitting development, like real success story. And then Jake Bowers he's the guy who showed some signs of being better than, you know, he had been, some breakout potential, but it seemed like he was also really far away from it. And he's actually gotten there. He has actually gotten there. So in the pantheon of, I don't want to call it random, you know, random Brewers breakout seasons offensively, because like that feels like it's diminishing it. And we don't know what he's going to do down the road. But when we look at the guys who had that 1 year of insane production in Brewers history, this is one of them, man. Like out of the blue, no one saw it coming. A complete aberration from what they've done the rest of their career. Jake Bowers is near or at the top of that list, because this is a guy who's coming into Sunday, I think was eighth in baseball in WRC Plus. Think about that. Jake Bowers
eighth in baseball, not just the National League.
He is, when was the last, I mean, the last Brewer to be that high?
It's going to be Yelich in 19, right?
Yelich in 19.
I mean, I don't know that off the top of my head.
Willie was never, Contreras was good, but never that good. Churio never got there. It's got to be Yelich in 19. Yeah, you're right. If we're missing someone, please let us know. But that's pretty crazy. The best offensive season from a Milwaukee Brewer in 7 years belongs to Jake Bowers. I don't know, man. I got nothing else to really add to it. It was bats on Saturday were as good as it gets.
Oh dear. David Hamilton fell down trying to field the ball. Now the Brewers are trailing.
You gotta turn it off. You gotta turn the game off. You gotta turn it off.
Two decisions.
Although maybe we could talk about the field if like a guy's just.
Yeah, he fell down because the field is made of something like that isn't grass. He just like came undone under his feet, slid like a slip and slide. Whatever, it's fine. Two decisions that honestly maybe define the 2026 season when it's all said and done. And that's overstating it. Like, I don't know if this will be the case, but there are two decisions that really are interesting to me. One is that they brought Trevor McGill back. It was not obvious. In fact, I would say we were talking about it, how strong likelihood here at the beginning of the season, he's going to be traded. We couldn't believe he was back because he was a reliever who had a really good season last year. An all-star season last year was, you know, he's getting up there in age. You were seeing actual tangible signs of decline in what he could offer with his fastball. And you're like, trade this guy now while the iron is hot. And for whatever reason, they didn't, whether they, you know, they wanted to hang on to him or they couldn't find a trade partner. It just didn't happen. He comes back and he has been so lights out for them at the back end of the bullpen, including a hidden, like practically a perfect game here where he had retired 27 of 28, but the 28th was an intentional walk that they only walked because it was in the extra innings that the guy was standing on second base as the auto runner. So like hard to count that. I mean, not that really matters. Hidden no hitters are not a thing, but just tremendous work by him. All these 1-2-3 innings, 1-2-3 innings. I mean, Brandon Sproat went 22 straight innings without a single 1-2-3 inning. And Trevor McGill had like 10 of them in a row, 9 of them in a row. The other decision was bringing back Jake Bowers a couple years ago. Jake Bowers was could have been had by anybody. The Brewers brought him back on a minor league deal. It was not obvious he was going to make the big league roster. We talked about this on last week's podcast. And I mean, honestly, like, I don't know how much credit I want to give the Brewers for the offensive breakout, because I think the Brewers were fine just moving on. Like, it wasn't like they made it a priority to bring Jake Bowers back, but they brought him back. And he had a really nice year last year. And you said it, Kurt. This is why this was one of your predictions. You saw how... I don't think we understood how improved he was in the second half of last season. Second halves can be a little misleading, but Jake Bowers looked very, very comfortable in through the postseason. And then he comes back this year. His preseason, he's tearing the cover off the ball. He's homering like every game. And then it isn't quite that good to start the year. But then slowly but surely, he gets to the point where he's your best offensive player. And he is. He is their best offensive player. I know that there's an argument for Bryce Turang, but it's not a good one. He's their best offensive player. Wild that these two things happen. The Brewers got really fortunate with these decisions. I don't know how strongly they like made them happen, but they are benefiting from these two great calls. And Jake Bowers, man, gonna get MVP votes and gonna get the bag. No way he comes
back.
Yeah,
he's gonna get a bag for sure. I don't think I actually expected that prediction. Well, I guess we don't expect any of our predictions to be right.
No, we label them insane for a reason.
But I feel like you do feel a little bit like a lunatic, you know, saying, all right, surely this time the month of underlying signs of Jake Bowers being an elite hitter and then, you know, carrying it over to playoffs, surely this time that will actually translate for a Milwaukee Brewers hitter. And sure enough, it did. I mean, this is not like, that was all based off of how he looked the final month and a half of last year. And that can come and go quickly, but not in this case. It did not come and go quickly. He's basically been the same hitter he was for that month, and you put that together, now that's a full year.
Would we be betraying our listeners to just briefly run through those predictions? I know they're kind, I mean, they're out there, everyone heard them, but they've forgotten about them, so now kind of a cool reveal at the end.
We could. We do the big reveal at the end of the year.
I know, and we still will. We'll have the audio clips and everything, but Kurt, we're killing it. These are incredible. You predicted that Jacob Mizrowski would take a step forward. You said 2+ WAR. That's half of what you should have said.
He was like 3 WAR in the month of June.
I said someone would get an extension. Ding 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 ding. We got Cooper Pratt and Luis Lara. Come on down. You said Bryce Turang would hit 30 bombs, lower his average, but still hit 30 bombs. Okay, he's not going to get to 30, but he is still, you know, hitting home runs, and his average has dropped. I said relievers would lead the league in ERA. That's probably not going to happen, but it's.
They've been pretty good.
They're up there.
They were like fourth or fifth last I saw.
You said Jake Bowers would get a full breakout, have an all-star caliber season. Clearly, you are correct. I said that the Brewers would trade for CJ Abrams or another big deal at the deadline. That did not happen, but it almost.
But it was really close.
Almost.
Doesn't count, though.
Doesn't count.
Horseshoes.
You said Chad Patrick would be the best starting pitcher on the staff and Cy Young vote. That
was very wrong.
That's the most wrong.
That was very wrong. But that was also, what's the last category?
This is the insane category.
That was insane. That was insane. But it's like, as long as you believe 10% of it, then you got to roll.
Yeah.
Well, which I did. I did believe 10% of that.
I think it's the exact same thing as you seeing the Jake Bowers breakout. You thought that was going to happen. My insane was Joey Ortiz would hit better than 500 with the bases loaded. While that obviously is not going to happen, Joey Ortiz breakout season, second half only.
I was going to say, can it be a breakout season when your OPS is below league average?
No, because I absolutely only look at OPS from June on when I think of these things. Actually, let's talk about Joey Ortiz. Let's dovetail. Is this real? Is it real that Joey Ortiz can be this level of player? Because that would obviously be a huge boon for, I say this as Joey Ortiz grounds into a double
play. You got to stop doing it.
I'll stop now.
You have to turn the game off.
Okay. I'm going to do it. I'm going to turn the game off. Okay. We're good. I turned it off. Probably.
That is pretty great timing, though.
It is pretty great timing. Is Joey Ortiz for real? Like, I want to believe, and I'm not all in. I'm honestly not all in on this being real. But he every week he seems to continue to do what he's doing. I mean, since the middle of the season, he's been one of the best bats in this lineup.
I'm glad that the double play just happened. It was a great seg, actually. Thanks, JR. Yeah. Thanks, Joey.
Thank you, Joey.
Because like no. It's not like what he's doing is not entirely real. He's been incredible. Defensively, that we know what he is. That part is no question. There's like, I'm not saying that's not real, and I'm not saying his at bats haven't been better and the quality of contact hasn't been better, but he is outperforming the expected numbers. His plate discipline hasn't like gotten that much better, but nevertheless, like I think going into the year, we said that him as a like 90, like he's probably much closer to league average hitter than he is to whatever he was last year, 75-70 WRC plus. Like, he's probably in that 85 to 90 range. And I think he's gotten there in a very weird way this year. But I feel like the total production is kind of like indicative of who he is as a player. He's a good player. He's not a great hitter. But there's some tools in there that can be electric for short stints of time, much like we're seeing with Garrett Mitchell.
I cannot believe that the Joey Ortiz, David Hamilton thing at third base is going to last the duration of the season. I cannot believe they tried to address it differently. Couldn't try to address it differently. They've had some bad luck with injuries. Jet Williams among them, Luke Adams recently. You know, you haven't seen anybody else sort of, I mean, Andrew Fisher's still a little too low on the totem pole. Nobody's been able to sort of grab that position by the horns and say, you got to promote somebody. So this is what they've been rolling with. And
he will be the opening day third baseman next year.
Who is?
Ortiz.
You think? In 2027?
So. Yeah. I mean, opening day, maybe David Hamilton, but you get my point.
Yeah, right. Honestly, I don't know if I can believe that. I just, man.
It's not going to be Andrew Fisher.
No, I know. You're right.
It's not going to be Luke. I mean, maybe Luke. I don't think maybe. Luke Adams is going to usurp Joey Ortiz.
Well, also, Luke Adams hasn't been playing exclusively third base. He's been kind of going back and forth. I don't think they view him as an actual third base candidate. But part of that is, Kurt, we've always been led to believe that the defense is what leads the discussion with the Milwaukee Brewers, that it is all about defense. Joey Ortiz, of course, a very good defender. But, like, this team is not that great defensively. They have key defenders in places. They obviously have Lara and Mitchell and, you know, Terang. I mean, guys that you can rely on. But defense overall, this team is just okay. So it's not like they're putting out the top defensive product. I mean, I think they believe in Ortiz and Hamilton enough. They fit whatever they're trying to do offensively, whether that's speed or whatever. I don't know, man. I don't know if I can believe he'd be there in 27, right out of the game.
Why would he not be?
I just figured
he's finishing. He finishes the year strong. He's like the best defensive third baseman in baseball.
Mm-hmm.
He's also your backup shortstop.
I mean, you're right. That's a useful player beyond the
like. There's a world in which he beats out Cooper Pratt for shortstop next year. Like you notice who's not playing against a right-handed pitcher for the second straight game against a right-handed pitcher. Cooper Pratt. Well,
he's coming off an injury, Kurt. I feel like there's a little wiggle room there.
I mean, yeah, maybe, but this is the second straight game against a right-handed pitcher that Joey Ortiz is playing. I'm noticing.
Oh man. I did not notice that. Honestly, that did not strike me. I just thought, yeah, hamstring issue. They're just easing him back in, but
Maybe easing him back until his at-bats are better because they've been really bad.
What do you want to say about Jacob Mizrowski against Chris Sale? Saw the top two, I think, top two finishers in the Cy Young just face off. I know Christopher Sanchez.
Sanchez had like has all the innings, so he might get second.
I think so.
Like his numbers aren't that different than Sale's.
I mean, I think very clearly it'll be Miz one, barring something crazy here in the last 6 weeks, and those two guys fighting for second and third. I think that's where.
Yeah, I don't know where Chase Burns fits in there too, but
yeah, maybe. What do you want to say about it? I mean, I don't think it was the best Miz we've seen, but again, he was able to fight through six strong innings.
Yeah,
the Brewers did just enough, like seriously, just enough against Sale. They probably could have done more against the bullpen, did not, but that's fine. They win the game 2-1. It was exciting. Trevor Megill strikes out Ronald Acuna Jr. to end the game with the tying run on base. Loved the ending there, tying run in scoring position. Anything that jumped to mind out of that matchup?
In the matchup itself, I think like let's talk about Miz a little bit and how he has not been at his best for a while now. And that's not, I don't say that like as a concerning thing, but it's definitely like it's worth noting that you want to see him trend up, maybe even in shorter if they don't, you know, you'd like to see him trending up to finish the season. But I do feel like JR, you give him some rest at the end of the year for the playoffs and you get that guy in the playoffs, he will be so juiced up that like you're like it's going to be electric. So that's what I'm not concerned. And then the flip side of that makes you less concerned is you see the way he pitches with like his C stuff. I thought he had like his C plus stuff just from a pure like maybe even C minus from a pure stuff standpoint in that game. And he finds ways to navigate the slider. He's been a couple months of like getting some more depth, some more vert on that pitch, and that helps him out. So yeah, I think it's encouraging when you look at his last two starts, and he has gotten through six innings against the Dodgers and the Braves with a fastball. I guess the fastball against the Dodgers was pretty good throughout, but it wasn't super whiffy. Like, the Dodgers were just all over it and fouling it off a bunch and taking it. But yeah, he's showing maturity. This is where we're seeing some of the improved command and the improved control come through, because he's executing with those secondaries and getting ahead of hitters and not walking guys. So I feel like things, even though the stuff isn't, you know, where it was in like early May, mid May, I still feel like him as a pitcher is trending in the right direction.
Mm-hmm. Kurt, we do have to talk about something that's happening in the game. I'm sorry, I have to break the rule. But Garrett Mitchell got hit on the forearm with a pitch and left the game in the fifth inning. Forearm, I should say, it's closer to the wrist, his right wrist, his throwing wrist. Man, that would be really rough. Obviously, we're not going to have a lot of information about that before the end of this podcast, but hoping for the best there. The season of Garrett Mitchell has been quite the sight to behold. They are covered in the outfield and could handle a short-term absence, but if you're getting hit with a pitch, that's hopefully just precautionary, because that would be probably the end of the regular season for him, for Mitchell, if there is a break there. So I'm concerned, Kurt.
I'm sorry, I can't add anything. He just left the game.
He just walked off.
That's probably what it is. They're going to get x-rays. That's why he's leaving the game.
To me, because they haven't activated Sal Frelick, and I keep thinking to myself, I'm not positive what they're going to do with Sal Frelick when they activate him.
Those signs, okay, that's something that we should talk about, because unfortunately, JR can't add much to the live game that's happening
in front of our faces.
In front of our faces, when people are going to listen to this 2 days down the road.
Yeah.
Sal Frelick should be back on Tuesday, but some of the way they've handled this and some of like the comments from Pat Murphy have been
weird.
Eye-opening of like, oh, it's like Sal, like, is his arm actually okay? Like, did he actually heal up? What's this? Like, is there structural, like, what's the problem here? So we don't have a ton of great answers on that and how much it's affected him and how much it's going to affect him, but a little nebulous, other than outside of the fact that, like, I know, and this is not nebulous, I know some of the comments have been, I don't know if cryptic's the right word. It's not the right word, but yeah, weird. Eye-opening. Makes you want to monitor the situation and see how his arm is, how it impacts his fielding, how it impacts his hitting.
Well, do you think it relates specifically to his health? Because I guess I was kind of reading it as, is this just their way of dealing with the fact that they don't know if Sal Frelick is better than the guys they have on the roster right now? I mean, it isn't.
He's better than someone on the roster.
He might be, but
he might not. Like, Luis Lara might play a little bit. Sal Frelick's not going to play every single day.
No, I know that. But, and obviously, like, Ornelas.
But, like, Johnny Ornelas is on the roster. Yeah.
No, I know that. But in terms of what you do with him, like, maybe this is an opportunity to just keep Sal playing, because you don't want to take Luis Lara's minutes away.
But Luis Lara hasn't been that good.
No, offensively, he has not.
He's made some interesting defense. His defense is actually kind of, that's something to talk about, because outs above average sees him as pretty average, and then DRS sees him as fantastic, and obviously his highlight plays are fantastic. So I think he's a great defender, just like tools wise and skills wise. I think he has a chance to be a Gold Glover. I fall somewhere in between of like, he has been incredible, and also there's been a few plays. I guess those plays were early where he hasn't been, like, that he just missed.
Yeah.
And you put the whole thing together, and it's like, okay, yeah, he's been good. I think he's been better than one OAA. Like, I think he makes some really nice plays.
Yeah. I still am weirded out by the way that the defenders around him have reacted to him. Like, it's almost like he's like a rookie coming into a new offense who doesn't quite know the plays, which obviously doesn't apply to baseball, but it just feels like he's in spaces that sort of have irked couple guys, Mitchell among them. So, like, I don't know what to make of that. He's obviously,
I don't think you need to make anything of it. I think he just is like over. He's like, he wants to catch every ball so bad.
Yeah.
And he's the center fielder. He's used to being the guy.
Of course.
And he will be the center fielder. Not this year, but he will be the center
eventually. Fielder. Yeah. Maybe sooner than we think, depending on what's happening with Garrett Mitchell tonight. Anything you want to add to the 22-0 game? That was a fun one on Monday, tornadoes and all. Of course, 9 of those runs coming in the 9th against Leo Rivas, a position player pitching who did not have it. It was not his night on the mound. And that brings us actually back to Luis Lara, because he Luis Lara bats right-handed against a righty pitcher, position player pitching. And goes clearly to activate his power side and go up there with the intent of hitting a home run, which is exactly what he did. His first big league home run comes against a position player. That is a interesting way to do it. And I kind of loved it. I believe he's the first Brewers player since Tyrone Taylor to hit his first big league home run off a position player. That happened back in 2020. So I enjoyed that. I probably could have added that in 3 up, 3 down. Like, is that real or not? I mean, it's going to be real. Anything else from that game that really jumps out at you? Because that was a fascinating time.
They won 22-0. That's what jumps out. There's so much snowballing in a game that nothing else jumps out. Gary Sanchez jumps out.
Scoreless 9th to preserve the shutout. Largest shutout in MLB history, MLB history.
So nine. we were looking this up. We couldn't find the exact, it's almost impossible to find a search for this, but we did find 3 instances of a position player closing out a shutout that his team won
in Brewers history.
No, we found 3, I think, total.
Oh, okay.
Was Anthony and Siegler, the most recent one in baseball was Anthony Siegler last year. They won 14-0. It was they crushed Paul Skeens. It was the 12th or 13th straight win.
Kurt, I don't remember that at all.
And I was like, I remember them hitting Skeens. I don't remember the rest of this at all.
I do remember it because I was there, because I asked Anthony Siegler, because he's capable of throwing lefty righty. I'm like, did you have a glove that you could switch in case you wanted to throw? I forget, he threw righty, right? So he didn't use lefty at all. Even against lefty batters.
He doesn't really throw left anymore, but he should have.
Yeah, that would have been really, really fun. He was like, oh, should I have done that? And I'm like, I don't know. I don't know what it's like to throw with both arms. That's amazing. Anthony Siegler, Boston Red Sox, they're having a really good time. I don't remember that at all, though. Not really. Even if I was there, I know I was there. I was at the Skeens start. I remember this was during the run, because I believe now, Kurt, that's the one that triggers the 12th win in a row. Is that not number 12? Is that the one that triggers the George Webb promotion?
I thought that was a night game.
Okay, so that would have been number 11, probably, because 13, of course, is in Cincinnati. 14 is the thriller, also in Cincinnati. That's the end of the streak. So 12 would have been this season finale, the series finale. It would have been a day game. It would have been a day game.
The 12th Burger game was a day game. I'm looking this up now.
Yes, I agree. Gary Sanchez, though, what a pitcher. 2 scoreless innings on the year on the hill. That's pretty funny. I love that. Before we get to 3 up, 3 down, as you're looking stuff up, real quick, Robert. Night game. Okay. So number 11, most likely. Maybe 10, but probably 11. Robert Gasser. Pat Murphy did something that I think, based on what I'm hearing him say, he probably regrets a little bit. And that's for the second time this year going out in the middle of an at-bat to remove a pitcher. It was Robert Gasser in his start this week. It was, he did that with Brandon Sproat after Sproat had uncorked a couple wild pitches. One of them was probably more of a pass ball than a wild pitch. And that felt right to me, because it felt like Sproat just he's lost it. He needs to get down to AAA. You just got to move on here. I don't feel that way yet with Gasser, even though I don't think Robert Gasser is going to be able to start games for this team in the postseason or have even high leverage things in the postseason. He's just not at that level, I don't think. But I found it curious that Pat Murphy went out and removed him in the middle of the start. I don't know where his next start will be. I think it's in Milwaukee. They would have made that move already. Coleman Crowe pitched the same day as him and has been very successful, has not allowed an earned run in August with AAA. So there's a possibility there if they want to do that. Of course, they're thinking about coming back to a 5-man rotation. What they'll do with Shane Drouin after Sunday's start, we don't know yet. But I don't know. What did you think of that whole scenario?
I guess I don't have a spicy take on pulling a guy mid at bat. It's fine. It's fine. It's fine. If a guy doesn't have it, you're in the big leagues, your job is to win the game. It's unusual. And the fact that he's done it twice in a month now is even more unusual. But I think the real issue there is Robert Gasser can't find the zone.
Yeah.
And he has just not found any way to have any consistency. like there's been some signs. There's some signs where the like even in that game, the fastball played. When he's locating it, it played, and he's got other stuff. The changeup can work. Obviously, the sweeper's a good pitch. Then he's made strides with his secondary fastballs as well. But ultimately, when it feels like every other start, you're either not locating at all or you're getting pounded for at-bats at a time, then I don't know what to make of it other than it clearly isn't, it hasn't come together and it's not working right now. But the Brewers also need a fifth starter and they're trying to limit Shane Drouin's innings. And Shane Drouin's can be really, really good out of the bullpen anyway. And you are six games up in the division. And yeah, like, would I have expected Robert Gasser to make 15 starts this year if I was, you know, if this is how I was told it was going to look? No, I would have said there's no way. They have so much other pitching depth, they'll go with someone else. But it gets a little bit into like who else is going to make. Coleman Crowe could make the starts, yeah. I guess.
Well, that's the obvious one right now. That's the obvious one. I mean, obviously you hope Sproat figures some things out and is back. I don't think they're counting on that. there's actually another possibility that we'll have to kick off 3-up-3-down with. If you don't want to, I will. So yeah, we'll see you there. All right, let's do this. Let's move into some of the more granular details from the week. It is our weekly segment, looking back at the week that was. Here it is, 3-up-3-down. Kurt, you broke some news on Saturday. Was that Saturday? Friday? Saturday? It was Saturday.
Yeah, Saturday.
What is going on, Kurt? What's happening?
I don't know. That's not true. I have an idea, I think. But the real answer is no one really knows entirely other than these facts. Brandon Woodruff did not get surgery. Brandon Woodruff is not undergoing surgery. At least that's the plan. Brandon Woodruff is planning to play catch on Wednesday. Mm-hmm. He'll be reevaluated in 5 weeks. That's what we know.
5 weeks. Interestingly enough, Kurt, I don't know if you know this, lines up beautifully with the end of the 2026 regular season, Kurt. So that means that upon reevaluation, the Brewers could say to themselves, you know what? Brandon Woodruff, put him on the playoff roster. I think that would be insane. And I also think that's crazy to even like dream about. Honestly, we've seen a lot of, I feel like there's a lot of fits and starts with the Brandon Woodruff saga. You know, it's like, oh, he's going to be okay. No, he needs another week or another 2 weeks. And we've talked about the reasons for that and why there's obviously a lot of caution around him. But like, honestly cannot bring myself to believe that Brandon Woodruff will be available in the postseason. I think that's kind of pie in the sky. And I think the Brewers would say that too. However, the door ain't closed. The door is not closed.
It's not closed. If I had to put a number on it, I might go with 10%. It just feels so like so many things have to, well, I guess like one of the main things that would actually probably lower the number is they probably have to make the World Series.
Yeah.
Because this is right. Catch progression. I did not get the sense from talking to him yesterday. And I might need to clarify this 100%, but I did not get the sense that the mound is included. Like pitching, maybe throwing off, I don't know, but like pitching, it was catch play progression for 5 weeks, throwing progression for 5 weeks, not like ramping up to actual pitch. So if that is indeed how it is, you gotta know going into a series that he's ready. So that would be what, the World Series, like 20th of October.
They're not gonna put him on the World Series roster after he hasn't pitched in months. That's, I don't know, insanity.
They would.
The only reason to do that is if you just don't have enough bullpen guys who are performing, like you have an opening and maybe you can put him in as like the last guy in the bullpen is like maybe a cleanup guy. I mean, I just think that's ridiculous. I don't think that's going to happen, but
yes. Okay. Yeah. Maybe even lower, but the fact of the matter is the real thing that's impacted here. And this is what the gist of our conversation was about was how this could change things in the future. And Woodruff like doesn't want to get too far ahead, understandably, because I mean, gestures broadly at his shoulder the last 3 years. Like,
yeah,
you can understand why the guy wouldn't let himself ever get too far ahead. But he also, I think, realized what a second shoulder surgery at age 33 would mean to his career. And this is sort of could be a lifeline to his career and him pitching somewhere, maybe Milwaukee, maybe not, next year. I mean, I know they would love to have him back. I know he would love to be back, but it's a matter of, like, there's some, I don't want to call, it's not politics, but there's a side of that too, right? Where it's like, well, we just paid you for 9 starts, you know, like someone else would probably pay you more. Like, I don't know. So we can get into that later, you know, at the end of this process, where we see how it turns out for him and his shoulder playing catch, because he's not out of the woods yet. He still has to get through this healthy. But sounds like some of the small damage that they saw in the shoulder that eventually made him go, well, guess we got to do it again. It healed.
Yeah. Weird story. My number one, let's go to the minors. You know, I love to do that. Let's talk a little minor league. Two stories that really, I enjoyed this week from the minor leagues. One of them on Sunday, Brandon Sproat was involved in a no hitter with AAA Nashville. He only threw 3 innings and the game itself was only 7. It was part of a doubleheader. It had been postponed a couple days. Sproat was originally scheduled to throw Friday. That got rained out. So they was going to do game 1 of the Saturday doubleheader. That whole thing got rained out, moved to Sunday. They played a game short this week and Brandon Sproat threw 3 innings. Tate Keener, freshly back from injury, in his second outing since he missed a good chunk of the season, he threw the last 4. Tyler Black in left field. This is where he's been playing at Nashville. Tyler Black makes a kind of a lunging catch up against the wall for the last out. There were a couple runners on base. There were not many in the game, but Keener had issued a walk and a hit batsman. So there were 2 on with 2 outs. And the last fly ball looked like it might be a home run that would have actually been a walk-off loss. This would have been a one-hitter walk-off loss. Instead, it was caught by Tyler Black and a no-hitter for the Nashville Sounds. First time we've seen a Brewers minor league team throw a no-hitter since 2021, and first time it's happened in Nashville since 2017 when they were with the Oakland Athletics. That was kind of fun. And then earlier in the week, Sawyer Strohsnyder, who is the second-round pick by the Brewers here in 2026, hits his first professional home run with the Wisconsin Timber Rattlers at the Timber Rattlers Stadium. And he hits it right into the hands of his father, who was beyond the right field wall. You know, you read the stories about it. It sounds like he just kind of had a feeling and he was sort of like nosing around a private party. Like, hey, that kid's going to hit a home run. And he did. He hit it right to his dad, Scott, who caught the ball. That was a really fun moment. They talked about it. You know, of course, that became kind of a 24-hour story. But Sawyer Strohsnyder on the board with a very fun moment. His father catching his first home run ball. That's one way to keep the ball. One way is to just hit it to your family. That will do the trick. So those are both fun things. That's my number one.
Do players negotiate for their first minor league home runs?
I don't know. I've got to think so to some degree, but it's like, brother, I make, you know, I already spent my signing bonus. I can give you like a little bit of per diem and maybe a trading card or something. Like, what? I don't know what you want from me. That's what
one of my favorite things that I see every year, and I mean this unironically, is one of my favorite things, is at the start of every Dominican summer league season, yeah, all these kids, like all of every single one of them, they get their first hit or their first strikeout and they get the ball and it's just someone writing in pen, first career K.
Yeah.
And they're all posting it on their stories. It's just like a week straight of every 17-year-old DSL kid.
That's so funny.
Is saying that it's pretty funny.
Yeah. It is fun to see people get this excited about these milestones and lot more to go, hopefully, for a lot of those. But all right, what's your number two?
William Contreras had a good week.
He did. Needed it.
He showed some signs on last Saturday in Dodger Stadium, but one game ain't going to do it. That's not going to convince me of anything. One week can do some convincing. Mm. It has the capability to do a little bit of convincing. So I still feel like we talked about this, that like he should still have a really good hitter in there. And he with 5 weeks to go, you would take your chances on seeing that at some point. And we are now seeing it at multiple points. He had a four hit game and on Friday, three of them against Chris Sale, just performed really well.
Yeah. He also had a moment where he throws out Ronald Acuna and stares him down, has a fun little exchange with Acuna. They clearly know each other, of course, both Venezuelan. So threw him out. I want to say there's some possibility that he kind of did some deking there. I'm not entirely sure. Like he was kind of I think it was a
delayed steal.
It was, because he'd been softballing the ball back to the pitcher. He had just been throwing kind of lazy, and I think Acuna tried to take advantage of that, and Contreras seemed like he was fully ready for it and threw a dart. I think William Contreras knew what he was doing. And honestly,
I wouldn't put it past him. That's like right up his alley.
I think
this is the man who throws the hardest average velocity back to the mound.
Uh-huh. It's weird, yeah, right?
It's quite possible.
I think it's very safe to say that William Contreras has had a bad season overall. I am intrigued by this turnaround. We remember how well he played last year in the postseason after having kind of a whatever season. So I am willing to bet of all the players, he's got a little bit of a switch. And I will say this, his throws to second base, works of art. There's nothing better than seeing William Contreras chuck a ball to second base. I don't know how he hits that spot so cleanly, but that is not something I would ever criticize him for. My number two, Luis Lara's defense. We alluded to it. He did make a couple crazy plays. He got some smoke from Jacob Mizorowski, which I really appreciated, for a leap into the wall. Jacob Mizorowski playing the role of reporter after his start on Saturday and was like, did you need to fly into the wall there? Was that a necessary jump? And then Lara also made a nifty play on I don't remember which day that was, where he made like the sliding play on his knees, whether that was Friday or Saturday. But he has, like we said, the pop plays, or whatever you want to call them, the flash plays have been there. They've been good. Sometimes it's unclear how much he needs to jump. I do like the Lara t-shirt. Remember, Kurt, on our bingo card at the beginning of the year, I said that there would be a team t-shirt that would revolve around Craig Yoho. That is not going to happen. Has not come to pass. Our bingo card is a disaster, and we should never speak of it again. But
no, we'll do a new bingo card next year.
It could not be worse than the bingo card we formulated this
year. Well, that's the whole point. These things weren't on our bingo cards. They're not supposed to happen.
It's a good point. It's a good point. And they definitely have not. I know that's part of the shtick. But the Lara t-shirt, I like that. I want one of those. That's fun. Him doing the jump man, you know, the Michael Jordan look. I love that. I want to get my hands on one of those. All right, that's my number two.
You said William Contreras is having a bad season.
I think it is.
I got to push back on that. He's a two WAR season with a month to go. He's on pace for a 2.5 WAR season on Fangraphs. Is that a bad season?
I think it's certainly underwhelming. I need to know more about how WAR is calculated for catchers.
Fangraphs accounts for framing, which he's been, which by the way, he has been bad at.
Between the ABS challenges, his pitch calling, an offense that I would say has been, I think, safely subpar for at least 3 months of the season.
Sure, yeah. Yeah, I'm not saying his season is not under everyone's expectations.
It is.
Frustrating things within there, like the really struggling at ABS and the slump and some pitch calling. That's fair, but I don't think it's fair to call it bad.
All right, well, then it comes down to the etymology of bad. You know, is he one of the worst catchers in baseball? No, he is not. Not even remotely.
Cal Raleigh's season is bad.
I mean, yes, Cal Raleigh's season is a calamity.
I looked up and saw that guy hitting 157. Like, I know he was having a bad year, but what?
It's honestly, like, breathtaking what's happened to Cal Raleigh. Seeing him in town this weekend, it's breathtaking. This week, I should say. Yeah, okay, so it's not that. Not even close, but it is... It is the difference. I think, like, if William Contreras turns it around here in the last stretch, like you think maybe this week is the harbinger of, I think the Brewers team is as positioned to get to the World Series as any team, like that they've ever had, because then the offense is actually quite a different animal if William Contreras is actually a dangerous middle of the order hitter. I don't think you're going to see that from other guys in the lineup, but I do think there's something William Contreras could provide that has not been provided this year, and that would be huge for them.
Yeah, that's. I'll give you that. Is it still? It's still my turn, right?
Yeah, you got a number three.
Brandon Sproat is part of a no hitter.
I said that already. That was my number one.
Sorry,
that's fine. I forgive you.
I was watching the game.
Do you want to have discourse about whether or not it counts if you hit your first career home run against a position player?
I was gonna say Trevor McGill's at bat to Acuna was delicious, I'll count that as mine. But yeah, it absolutely counts. 1000% counts.
Okay. Because that at bat was awesome, though.
Anything you do on a big league field means you got to the big leagues, and you deserve every stat you get. Like, I don't view it. Like, I don't know. I don't view it as anything really other than that.
Like, yeah, I think that's fair.
If you are on a big league field and they're going to throw a position player out there, I know Chirio did the funny thing and he hit left-handed, but like, I'm all for guys taking that at bat somewhat seriously. Yes. It's a big league game. Get your stat. Get your stats, kids.
Did you want to talk about McGill too?
There's a good at bat.
It was really good. Dude, the bullpen coming into this Sunday night game, the bullpen had not allowed a run all week. I think you had to go back to the Dodgers.
Really? I didn't even notice that.
I think even the last Dodgers game, the bullpen had not allowed a run. Sunday's
game, DL Hall allowed a home run the night.
That's right. But that was after the game was well in hand. You're right.
Yeah, they didn't allow any runs on Saturday.
Right. So then you go back to Friday. There's some.
I don't remember Friday's game at all.
Is that Robert Gasser? I think he allowed all the runs, 3-1. So that would then trigger in Thursday. I know they gave up more runs in the Dodgers series, but the bullpen has been really, really special lately. Aaron Ashby continues to be used a lot.
Oh, and, no, Sensatella gave up a run.
Okay.
Oh, that reminds me. Against the Braves.
Did he?
That eighth inning was quite bad, and he got out of it.
Okay, my bad. I missed one. So they have allowed one run this week. Coming into Sunday, there's an opportunity maybe going on right in front of my face where they could give up another run. I'm not sure. Antonio Sensatella, by the way, should mention, is my guest after this conversation. Talked to him on the homestand and got some thoughts on him. This is, of course, his first season with the Milwaukee Brewers, acquired from the Colorado Rockies. So that's fun. That'll be coming up here shortly. Did I do a number three? I kind of did, I guess, if we talked bullpen. You know, let me at least go through what we haven't talked about. Maybe we can also count that as my number three. We didn't spend a lot of time talking about that Jake Bauer slide or the Jake Bauer's 12 pitch at bat. But that is, was it 12 or was it 13? Did he home run the 13th pitch?
He home run the 12th pitch and saw 11, walked on the 11th in the first.
Just incredible stuff. I mean, Martin Perez, we'll see Jake Bauer's in his nightmares. William Contreras had an at bat like that a couple years ago in Houston. I want to say that was against Verlander. And that was very fun. Like anytime Manny Pena had one like that, I remember those 12 pitch at bats. If they get to that level and they hit a home run, it's pretty exciting stuff. So yes, Christian Yelich hit a nice home run. You had said on the last podcast that you expected a Christian Yelich opposite field home run this week. Immediately on Monday, the day after you said those words, he did hit a home run, but it was not opposite field. It was pulled. Does it count? Similar to the Luis Lara first home run conversation. Does it count? I say yes, I do. Garrett Mitchell, who, of course, is a topic of conversation as we speak, but he had a monster day game against the Mariners to close down that series. He had a big home run. He had a couple doubles, also made two great catches in the last inning. This is part of Trevor McGill's mastery. So Garrett Mitchell with a really nice showing in that game. Brewers had a 6-run first inning and then really had to hold on for dear life on Thursday. That was interesting. A lot of promotions in the minor leagues. You've got Luis Pena moving up to AA and having a tremendous first week. He is the 19-year-old who is the number two prospect in the organization and a guy who's floated in that trade for Tarek Skubal that did not happen. He gets promoted to Biloxi and immediately starts showing dividends. He hit his first career home run, first double A home run. And that was very fun. Trey Ebel, the first round draft pick, also debuted at Wilson this week. Brady Ebel is up to Wisconsin, making things happen for the Timber Rattlers. So that's very fun. And I think that's it. We did not talk about the Ronald Acuna throw to get Luis Lara trying to stretch a single into a double. That's insane. That's incredible. That's just like you stand up and applaud. That was just amazing stuff. Turn around corner of, I mean, how did he do that?
Blind, wide stance, no time to gather himself.
Just banana insane stuff. It is. All right, that'll do it for Three Up, Three Down. Let's go back in time. It's Kurt's favorite segment, if he's being honest. It is my weekly look back at Milwaukee Brewers history. It is Remember When. going back to 2010, not that long ago, but we have previously discussed the Brewers 22-2 win in 1992 over the Toronto Blue Jays. That is on a, I think that was last year or something. My favorite thing about that fact is, or that game, is that the Brewers hit a home run in the first inning, Paul Molitor, and then zero additional home runs, 22 runs, one home run, and it came in the first inning. And then the Blue Jays went on to win the World Series. That was not a pushover team that they absolutely manhandled. That, of course, was a 20-run deficit, this 22-0 deficit, the largest in Milwaukee Brewers history this week, and the most runs that they had scored in a game tying that 22-2 win. This other game I want to talk about was merely a 22-0 win over the Pittsburgh Pirates, the other monster shutout in which they scored 20 runs and did not allow a run in franchise history. The Brewers, through those like early, like late 2000s, aughts, is that what we're calling, like 01 to 09, the aughts? And then into the early 2010s, the Brewers dominated the Pittsburgh Pirates. They were 14-1 against them in 2008. Then they were like just 9-5 in 2009, then 13-5 in 2010, 12-3 in 2011. And this game in 2010 was one of those wins that they just embarrassed the Pirates. It was Pittsburgh's worst loss in franchise history. The franchise at this point is 124 years old. They had never lost 20-0, but they did against the Brewers that day in April. It's the 15th game of the season. Brewers scored one in the second, three in the third, three in the fourth, three in the fifth, six in the seventh. They just spread it out throughout the course of the game, four in the ninth. They had 25 hits. Position player did not pitch in that game. There was no position player on the mound. Octavio Dotel did pitch the ninth and gave up a bunch of runs, four of them. A couple were earned. Daniel McCutchen pitched for the Pirates. Spells the same as Andrew McCutchen, who, was also in that game. No relation. He only lasted 3 2/3 innings. He gave up 8 hits, 6 runs. His ERA did not go up. It was already very bad. It was 14.73 coming into that game. It actually went down after that performance. Daniel McCutchen was not good that year. He was pretty good the year after that. He had a nice season in limited work for the Pirates after that. Prince had a homer. Ryan Braun had a three-run homer in the third. He finishes with five RBIs. Fielder had another RBI single in there. Manny Parra had a single to close it down, the 20th run on pitcher Manny Parra's RBI single. Jim Edmonds hit a three-run homer. Let's remember some guys. Craig Counsell has a single. Randy Wolf, we've talked about him already on this podcast a couple times this year. He had the first six innings, didn't allow a run, six hits. Solid outing for our guy. Randy Wolf. The Brewers outscored the Pirates in the series overall 36-1. It was the worst three-game series in baseball dating back to 1993. 36-1 in that series. They owned the Pittsburgh Pirates. My goodness. The Brewers still ended the year with 77 wins. It didn't do them a whole lot of good. Congratulations on scoring 20 runs. They had a very mediocre season overall. Ken Maka, the manager of that one. But man, that was a tough one for the Pittsburgh Pirates. 20-0 back in April of 2010. Now let's close it down. That's it. Let's close it down the way that we always do. And that is with Kurt's take of the week. Here it is. Kurt Blanche.
I got a few for you this week. Do you want them all or do you just want one? What do you want? Order up.
I want to take them all. All. Okay. Bring me all.
Let's go. Bam, bam, bam.
Boom.
These events, I don't like them.
Are we talking about like the Little League event?
Yeah, I don't like this.
Well,
it's a cool day of the big league players hanging out with the Little League kids, but like, I'm kind of over these games. Even the Field of Dreams game, maybe it's because it was on Netflix. Maybe it's because the production of this game kind of stinks, but like, I don't know what the intended. Like, what is the intended point of this? Is it money from TV? Like, what are they going for? I'm not sure what's the intended audience besides the literal little leaguers there. Yeah, okay, whatever. That's nice. It feels good. You could send big leaguers there on an off day or whatever. Like, I'm just not interested. Like, I just don't find myself captivated at all by this game being played on this field in Williamsport. Maybe I'm cynical, but
yeah, I do think that's a little cynical because I do think that Little Leaguers legitimately cool thing. I think you're right to assume that there's always something a little bit more than just, for the kids.
The interactions today were cool for sure. No doubt.
I happened to be in Iowa at the Field of Dreams this weekend with my daughter for a softball tournament. I got to see the stadium where the Phillies and Twins played in the corn. I was not prepared for how like makeshift that is. Like, of course it's not a permanent stadium, but like it is weird that you do have teams traveling to areas that are very hard to get to for one game, rearranging their schedules. I mean, no other team has a home game played in Pennsylvania in substandard. I won't say substandard. That's probably not fair, but like,
no, it's not a big David part. Hamilton, David Hamilton slipped trying to step on the grass.
Like, and that, Andrew Vaughn fumbled the ball too.
That yeah, but I think that was maybe on just him. Andrew Vaughn. That yeah, was okay. on him.
But you're right. You're right. The turf is obviously not big league level. Like if Mizorowski had pitched in this game, do you think that mound would have been to his?
No, the Brewers never would have let Mizorowski pitch in this game.
Of course not. Of course not. But like the mound can't be that great. You know, I'm sure they're doing the best they can. It's just, this is not a big league park. It's not a big league travel schedule. Nobody else has to do this. And then, yeah, they get an off day Monday, but then they're right back in the thick of it after they've been thrown off. Like, I mean, sometimes I feel like if I talk about the a pro sports team's travel schedule, it's like, I mean, whatever. It's crazy every day. What's one more day? But sure. I don't know, man. I enjoy the interactions. That's cool.
This is like this is just kind of my take on. This is every sport, like the England, yes. the Germany well, games money. In football.
That's money.
That's money. And I
growing the sport.
Well, from a consumer standpoint, I do like it because I like the 8 a.m. NFL yes. kickoff.
NFL knows you like
but, it. So but if I put if I can put that aside, I don't really care for it. Like NBA when the Bucks went to France, I'm like, whatever, I don't care. So I am consistent. I feel like the only thing the only thing that's different, I would say, is like the outdoor hockey games. Those are pretty cool. But you can make a hockey rink, pretty much anywhere. I've seen it in Pompons. Anyway,
those hockey rinks have had some substandard quality too. I think they have the same problems.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. I shouldn't talk on that because I shouldn't act like I watch those.
Yeah, those are great. I don't watch them, but they're great.
I did attend the Camp Randall hockey games, and I was in like middle school. Those were mm-hmm. that was pretty fun mm-hmm. and cold day, but nevertheless, okay, we move past that. Jackson Chourio should be so good. Like, he should be like one of the best players in baseball good, and I wonder if the Brewers are ever going to get it out of him.
Do you think, let me throw this out there, the Brewers, I think it's become more and more aware how they handle their hitters, where they're having guys kind of like wait as deep as possible. Like, they're willing to sacrifice power, and it shows. They're last in the big leagues in homers to get guys who could get on base and, like, you know, like make good contact. And I think it's worked for them, but Jackson Chourio isn't that kind of hitter. And as he is as you see more and more of his production go to the opposite field, it feels like we're missing something with him. Do you think that this is just like not a good fit, Jackson Chourio, with the Brewers? I mean, it's too young to say. I don't know. That's crazy to say, maybe.
Yeah, it's tricky because I think it's fair to say the Brewers aren't a great, like, big league hitting development org, mm-hmm. but they're also not bad. Like, what they do clearly works. They're top five, I think,
in maybe, runs,
yeah. around there in runs. Their approach is so different than other teams, and I'm not saying like they do not. David Hamiltonized Jackson Chourio.
Yeah.
But if they had a better grasp or better success rate, or like, even if they like did at all, you know, find ways to encourage guys who can and do pull the baseball in the air, then Jackson Chourio, I mean, man, because how many flyouts does that guy hit 390 feet?
It's he's not the only one.
Yeah,
it is astounding how much warning track power they seem to have.
But, I did read the Joey Votto thread this week, which, you know, made a lot of sense. It was on Twitter if you missed it, about how hard it is to actually pull the ball in the air, and it made a lot of things make sense. And like, Pat Murphy is pretty averse to the idea of like proactively pulling the ball and says it happens, and I agree with him on a lot of those points. It just feels like, man, what if Chourio does not pull the ball in the air? And what if he did? And he's only 22, so maybe there's still time. There's still so much time for this guy to get there. But I think it's fair to wonder if the Brewers aren't getting the most out of him right now, and what will it take to get the most out of him? Because this guy's just a freak talent. And if he could hit any fly balls in the air to the left side, it would change a lot for him. Okay, yeah. That's number two. Number three is quick. This actually was going to be my take going into it. You got to stop calling for Andrew Fisher to come up to the big leagues. We got to stop doing it.
This podcast has not done that.
This is not you. I'm not talking to you.
All right. I just want to be clear, Kurt.
Clear your name. I get it. Just, like, stop tweeting at me about it. I'm sorry. I understand. The next shiny prospect is always the shiniest. You wouldn't like how it looks when he comes up. He's not going to be ready at the start of next year either. Like, Andrew Fisher is a ways away from the big leagues. Mm-hmm. I don't know exactly what his strikeout rate is. Let me look it up here. But he's still striking out a ton. Like, the double A pitchers are making adjustments to him. He's at 34.9% in double A. And I think there's a chance
in the minors.
Yeah. And like, guys can get away with a 35% strikeout rate in the big leagues. It's hard, but like, Kyle Schwarber can do it. Mm-hmm. Sure. Garrett Mitchell can get by with whatever he's at, 32 to 33, 34, whatever, something in that range.
It's also an elite defensive.
But this is double A.
Yes.
This is double A. So I'm not saying Andrew Fisher can't do it. I think he has the talent to be one of those outliers who just pull air, and speaking of pull air, hits the ball in the air and pull side and so hard consistently that he can be a good hitter, but it's not a sure thing in the future. And right now it definitely wouldn't, like, it's not happening and it should not happen.
Yeah. I think no one's going to want to hear this, but like, I realize he's going to hit maybe 40 homers this year in the minors. The bigger question is, are we sure Andrew Fisher can do this at the big league level at all? That strikeout rate is so alarming. And again, we've talked about this before. Like, his interviews, he seems to understand where the development is, and it does seem to be kind of part of a plan for whatever that, take that for what it is, for what it's worth. It does feel like they know what they're doing here, but that strikeout rate will not work. He will not be able, what you see right now isn't going to make it in the big leagues. And I pretty much believe he will be better at it. And next year we'll see that strikeout rate go down. We'll probably see the power numbers, the strikeouts go, or I should say the home runs go down a little bit, but it'll be for the greater good. He's definitely not an option in 2026. That's not going to help you. The ceiling is there. But there's a lot to unpack there. You know, like, I wouldn't count on him until you see a little bit better performance in the strikeout department. Kurt, is that it? Have we done it? Have we made a podcast?
We have made sweet, sweet music.
It's true.
Together once again.
Do we have any update on Garrett Mitchell as we're saying this? Like,
contusion. They're saying contusion.
It's a very scary word.
It's a much better word than some other. Much better word than break.
But would they say, like, in the middle of a game, oh, he broke his arm? They would not say that. They would just be like, he's going for further tests or whatever, right? Maybe they would say he has a fracture in the middle of a game, but I don't think I've ever seen that.
I don't know. I was just scrolling quickly. I'd have to pull it up on the spot. Everyone who's listening knows. Hopefully, just look it up.
Even when a pitcher like clearly snaps his UCL in the middle of the game, he like left the game with shoulder elbow discomfort. Yeah. You know, they downplay that real hard. So yes, we prefer contusion to break. I think, Kurt, the Brewers will not be winning this game that people will wake up and know the outcome of, but maybe there's a rally in there. He is Kurt Hoag. Find everything he has at jsonline.com. Journal Sentinel beat reporter covering the Milwaukee Brewers. He'll be in New York as the Brewers take on the New York Mets. That starts on Tuesday. They come back home again to face the Texas Rangers through the weekend. A little more interleague play. Just a couple more interleague series on the docket. You got the Rangers and the Orioles still to come. And then that's it. That'll do it for the interleague portion of the 2026 season. The Brewers have made some hay against American League teams yet again. It seems to be something they're very, very good at. Now here is my interview with Antonio Senzatela, former Colorado Rockies pitcher. He made his one and only playoff appearance at Miller Park with the Rockies, game one of the NLDS back in 2018. So I asked him about that, coming over, and the whole gamut. He's a very nice guy. It's cool talking to him. So that's what's next. Thank you for listening to this episode of Microbrew. We'll talk to you again next week. Bye, everybody. My guest is Antonio Senzatela, new relief pitcher for the Milwaukee Brewers. First question for you. Tell me a little bit about where you were born and raised and what your parents did for a living.
I'm born and raised in Valencia, Venezuela. Mm-hmm. My dad was a carpenter. I'm a taxi driving.
Okay.
And my mom was early in my childhood, she was just house mom, and after they divorced, my mom was a she had her own breakfast, like empanadas breakfast.
Oh, amazing!
Yeah, breakfast place.
Okay, does she ever? I mean, like I'm assuming it's really good, right?
Yeah, super good.
I kind of want some of that sounds amazing. What did your father, what carpentry did he do? Did he build houses or was it something?
No, like he built like couches and stuff like that, like you know, tables, stuff like that, furniture.
Okay,
tell me kitchens and stuff like that too.
Can you build that stuff too?
Nah.
No? You never got involved with that?
Okay. No, never.
Tell me about Venezuela as a baseball country. I've asked that of a few people, what you remember and what baseball was like for you growing up.
Baseball was, you know, like everything for me down there.
Sure.
You know, like I love to be in the field. I play as a kid, you know, like enjoy, have fun every day, smile. And that is, you know, like baseball was amazing out there. I remember my mom, dad always support me, my grandpa always there to me, like on the weekends.
Yeah.
I mean, it's amazing.
Yeah. How about playing in the WBC and getting the invitation to do that and then what that meant to you to be part of that?
You know, it's really nice to have that invitation to be in the Venezuela team for WBC. And, you know, it was an amazing experience for me. Like, we win it all.
Mm-hmm.
It's nice to be with, you know, like a couple of the greatest Venezuelan players. And I think it was amazing for me and my family to enjoy that moment.
What do you remember about your first playoff start? Because that's here at American Family Field.
You know, I remember everything. I'm honest.
Sure, like, sure.
Yeah. That's a really, I think we lost the game, but I remember I get Al Brown in the first inning, tried to steal home play in the white pitch.
Mm-hmm.
And I remember Christian hit it out to center field. Every day I talk to him like, bro. I remember that homer like every time.
A lot of people who do too.
I come to this place. You are amazing, my man. We were just joking about that the other day.
Yeah. Do you, I mean, like, do you remember where you were at the end of that game? Because that game goes into extras. I'm assuming you were in the dugout.
Yeah, we went to extras and I think Mustakas hit it basically.
Walk off
like super high fastball, like we don't know how he get there.
Yeah. On an 0-2 pitch.
Yeah. 0-2 pitch, high blower, super high, and he get there for the base hit.
Mm-hmm. I know this was not a particularly good start for you, but giving up the 3,000th hit to Miguel Cabrera, who's another Venezuelan, you know, I didn't know if, you know, you had followed his career at all because he was from Venezuela.
Yeah, for sure. You know, like Miguel is one of the greatest Venezuelan player ever. I think maybe the best one to myself. I think he's the best Venezuelan player. You know, like he give me a base hit, beyond that, like 3,000 hits. I don't want to give out a hit, but you know, like it's Miguel Cabrera. Like he got 3,000 hits plus. I just got one of them.
Yeah,
it's not like I have 2,099. I just got one of them.
Just one.
You know, but what's good for him and good for Venezuela and country, and that's amazing.
Not a lot of guys have the success you had in Colorado. I mean, the longevity in Colorado. What did that organization mean to you, and how did you learn how to pitch in Coors Field?
That organization, you know, to me is like my other family.
Mm-hmm.
I was there when I was 15 years old.
Mm-hmm.
Like, it was the only organization I know as a baseball player.
Yeah.
And they treat me well. They treat me like a son. They always give me the best they can. And I always give them the best I have. Mm-hmm. You know, like I always play for them 100%. And sometimes I got it good, sometimes not bad, but that is what it is. It's how this game goes so far, sometimes.
Everyone saw you shake hands with the grounds crew there at the end. So that's a really cool gesture.
You know, I love them. You know, I was there for 10 years. Mm-hmm. And they always there. And we always talking. They see my kid growing up during the years.
Yeah.
And they always ask me about my family. I always ask them about their families. And, you know, like, we get close together because it's amazing. They are amazing people in Colorado. I'm really happy to be part of that.
so far, there's only been a few outings with the Brewers. How are you different now? I mean, we could see the sinker usage, but just in general, how do you feel?
I feel really good. You know, this is an amazing team. Amazing teammates. They come here every day to win the ball game and to do everything they can to win. And, you know, it's nice. We have really nice pitching coaches and everything. And I enjoy my time here. And I just wanted to throw good and giving myself and the team the best outside.
Does it feel like you're a different pitcher as a reliever? I mean, you've kind of been reborn a little bit, being able to pitch out of the bullpen.
Yeah, for sure. You know, like, feels different. Before, I don't have these two pitches that I have right now, like Tinker and the Corey. I'm engaged with that two pitches, and I'm having good results right now.
All right. Antonio Sensatella, thank you so much, sir.
Thank
you. Appreciate it.
Appreciate it.